Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics and self-regulation with business and industry leaders. Together, we seek to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series Podcast. I'm James Lee. When the first cases of a novel coronavirus were reported in China in late 2019, U.S. businesses were not focused on what would become a global pandemic. What they were thinking about was how to comply with tough new state privacy laws that were about to go into effect in 2020. Flash forward to today, and the Consumer Privacy Act of California, among others, is in effect. But with Americans sheltering in place and government agencies at all levels taking unprecedented actions, privacy seems to be the least of anyone's worries. In fact, actions that would have been unthinkable just 6 months ago, like using location data to track infected patients, now seems acceptable. On the other hand, regulators and litigators alike have shown they are not going to give companies a pass for poor cybersecurity or privacy protections, even as business as usual is anything but. When businesses are struggling to remain viable, privacy issues may not be on everyone's priority list, but our guest today is here to make the case they should be. Caitlin Ringrose is a policy fellow at the Future of Privacy Forum. Caitlin, thank you for being here today.
Hi, James, and thank you for having me. I'm happy to represent the Future of Privacy Forum today.
Well, let's kind of start there with, tell us a little bit more about the Future of Privacy Forum.
Of course. FPF is a nonprofit. We're based in Washington, D.C., and we focus on data protection guidelines for emerging technologies. We work on a range of privacy issues from health, AI, connected cars, smart cities, and more. We really consider ourselves data optimists, and we embrace the many uses of data for good. Our goal is to help craft guidelines and best practices to maximize the benefits of data-driven technologies while mitigating the risks. I work primarily on health privacy, as well as state and federal legislation.
That's a pretty full menu. That covers a wide range of territory, which I guess just shows us privacy is a big issue, even in good times and bad. Well, let's talk specifically, since your area of expertise is health and we are in the middle of a pandemic, what are the unique privacy risks to this sort of time in which we are in? And what is it we are considering and what is it we should be considering?
You're right that this is a very unique time. FPF recently created a new focus area, which marries our work in health, AI, machine learning, and more, to create what we have started to call our privacy and pandemics work stream. So during this current pandemic, there's been this incredible influx of governments, researchers, healthcare institutions, and others who are seeking to obtain and deploy data from multiple sources. Those sources can include mobile carriers, location aggregators, app developers, and more. And these data-driven efforts can help do a lot of things that are really beneficial for society, like trace the spread of COVID-19, help enforce travel restrictions, help with the delivery of supplies, and this can even help aid in the search for vaccines. So it's important to remember these benefits. And remember that data protection standards are not at odds with data collection and use during a pandemic like this. Instead, an adherence to privacy and security principles and standards, like only collecting data that you need and that is proportionate to that need, is the perfect rule to follow during this sort of unprecedented emergency. But like you mentioned, there are these risks. So while corporate health data can be incredibly helpful, it can also be inaccurate or not always actionable on the part of researchers. And it can be incredibly sensitive in that it can reveal a lot about you. So personal data that can be of use to public health officials and other critical stakeholders could include things like location and proximity information, so how far away you are from an infected individual, transactional data, so where you have been and what you have bought, facial recognition information, so who you are, and other sensitive bits like body temperature, personal health information, search engine history, and more. When I say that location can be inaccurate, one particular data set we look into at FPF is location data, which we should all be interested in, but also skeptical of. Precise location information can yield incredibly personal details about individuals, like where they live, where they go to eat, who their friends are. The privacy risks of utilizing this information are great. And one of the biggest risks, at least for me, when it comes to this unprecedented collection, is that governments and other stakeholders might not want to give up access to this data once the current crisis passes. So you can imagine the difficulty of oversight when it comes to demanding that countries give up this information.
Yeah, and we've just spent a lot of time over the last, 18, 24 months, having, at least at this, particularly the state level, a lot of discussion around location data. And, you've had states enact restrictions on that. How do we square those restrictions when things are good with now here we're in a time when location data has societal value? So whose needs are going to win out here in this debate? And does it need to even be a debate?
It does not need to be a debate. A comprehensive federal privacy law, if we had one here in the United States, should be crafted with flexibility in mind and should have these sorts of events, if not this particular event, in mind. So creating some flexibility within a law and some forward thinking would have gone a long way to helping companies in terms of giving them guidance of what they need to comply with. So privacy and public health are not at odds. And in fact, can and do exist in harmony with each other. Health information is very, very sensitive in that it can reveal so much and be so harmful if released or breached.
And when we're talking about location data, I guess there's two flavors of that. There's that which tells you about me as an individual, but there's also that which is anonymized. So basically, then you're talking about my device. Any distinction there we need to be aware of, or does that cure some of the privacy concerns if we're anonymizing this information?
Of course. So commercial data, including location data, can be shared so it doesn't reveal any information about identified or identifiable individuals. So for example, companies may process aggregate data about how people move through public transportations or how packages move through supply chains. In other cases, data originally collected from individuals can be transformed or de-identified. And de-identified means that it will only reveal aggregate trends, such as movements of people, but not reveal individual level personal information. So public health benefits can be derived from the use of this kind of aggregate location data. So this can show trends in how diseases spread, how many hospital beds are needed at certain locations, and other things. Individual level personal data is where the risk may be the greatest to privacy. And the use of this personal information should be accompanied by as many security and privacy safeguards as possible.
I guess one of the sort of the signs of the time that we're in, recently the Senate, one of the Senate committees had what they called a paper hearing. There's nobody in the room. In fact, there was no room. It was a series of witnesses submitted testimony. And now I believe they said for 96 hours after the hearing, in air quotes, that there would be questions submitted by the members of the committee to the experts. And there would be this dialogue back and forth based on their testimony, but not any in-person testimony. So appropriate social distancing. Now, I know that the Future Privacy Forum provided commentary to that. What did you guys tell the Senate that we need to be doing?
So you're right. It was an interesting experience. I've never heard of anything like this paper testimony. But I think if anything, it really gave us time to think about what our recommendations would be, write them out, consolidate them. And our senior counsel at FPF, Stacey Gray, actually provided that testimony to the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. Our recommendations there were largely based on expert opinions from various privacy and pandemic workshops and reports that we've written and hosted. And in our testimony, we put together five recommendations. The topic of that committee hearing was enlisting big data in the fight against COVID-19. So for us, those recommendations were fivefold. First, companies should follow the lead of public health experts. Second, we recommend that companies ensure transparency and lawfulness. Third, companies need to apply privacy-enhancing technologies. Fourth, companies should employ privacy risk assessments. And finally, in that testimony, we truly endorsed the importance of purpose limitations. So I can go through those a bit if that would be helpful for you.
Yeah, let's dig into that. And I do want also point out that in that testimony, there was no small amount of mention of something that I think is very important, and that is public trust. None of these things work if the public don't trust that their data is going to be used appropriately. So talk about those elements around public trust and how that relates to the recommendations you're making.
Of course. So our first point was for companies to follow the lead of public health experts. And this really does key into public trust and how this data is being used. We believe that tech and big data has a place in the fight against COVID-19, but that place is not at the helm of this battle. Rather than leading the way with data, technology companies should play a supporting role to epidemiologists, established research partners, and public health experts. In other words, companies should rely on established expertise when it comes to determining what data is useful. We really want to make sure that we're honoring the public who is furnishing their data for good, and we're using that data to help support renowned experts. Our second point was that companies should ensure transparency. This really also ties into this public trust notion that right now we're already in such a difficult situation, and we need to make sure that we're honoring individuals. In order to ensure public trust, including in the use of these voluntary apps, companies should be as transparent as possible about what data they're getting and what they're sharing with the government. Our third point was about privacy-enhancing technologies and how companies should take advantage of all of these advancements made by privacy engineers. We shouldn't just kind of leave these in the past. Data minimization means you only collect and keep the data you need, and privacy by design means that you implement privacy and prioritize it through the life cycle of your app. So we really suggested that in order to help, once you get that trust, keep it throughout the life cycle of your app.
Yeah, let's pause there for just a second, because we've seen that in the European privacy rules around the general data protection, the GDPR. This concept of privacy by design and security by default. That's not a concept we have much in the United States. How important is it that becomes the norm? And is this circumstance the time to reinforce the value of that?
It's incredibly important. I can't emphasize this enough, that companies really need to understand the importance of privacy at the inception of even designing an app or before collecting data, and then making sure that they're honoring that design principle throughout, again, the life cycle of the app. So once you collect, once you process, as soon as you make partnerships down the line, you should always be thinking about how to best honor your consumer's privacy and how to honor the commitments you made to them. And this can be done through application of different privacy-enhancing technologies, one of which is differential privacy. And so when I talk about those principles of data minimization and privacy by design, this is really what we're putting forward. It's ways of honoring consumer commitments.
Do you have anything in particular in mind? Because you're talking about in the testimony in particular, there was this discussion around we have made so many advances in privacy protection using technology, but the laws don't necessarily reflect that, and practices generally don't necessarily reflect that. Is there something in particular you guys had in mind when you were talking about that, or was it just general principles?
So privacy principles are really interesting in the United States because we place so much belief and stock in them, and they're so important. But one thing we need to remember, and I read all the various bits of testimony from everyone who submitted, and this seemed to be a common thread, is that we don't have a federal comprehensive privacy law. So we can discuss best practices, and we can discuss these really important principles like applying the best privacy-enhancing technologies out there, using anonymization and de-identification to the best of our abilities, but we really don't have any sort of federal guidelines to help us along the way. So companies that are collecting and using this data exist across different regulatory regimes and need to be aware of different and occasionally conflicting privacy and security regulations.
Yes, they do. 50 different versions. and in some cases, no version at all, or it takes a long time to get them enacted. You ticked off the 5 points. We'd made it through about 3 of them. Any that plus the privacy law. What is there any other comment you want to make about that before I move on to talking about best practices?
No, I think that's it. These five recommendations are where we're at now, and we look forward to creating more guidance for companies who are looking to leverage their assets. And one of those assets is data.
Yes, because there's no shortage of data. we create a lot of it every day, but it also, it's how you use it, isn't it? Because data is agnostic. It's really what you do with it that makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons we call ourselves data optimists, right? Data itself is neutral, but we believe in the many benefits that it offers to society, as long as it's accompanied by appropriate safeguards. And when we're talking about leveraging and enlisting data, we need to think about how to leverage it in the fight against coronavirus.
So are there best practices right now that, you know, because we've discussed that there is no national framework, but there are businesses who have data, they have the tools necessary to be helpful. Are there best practices they should be following today? And are there things we should look at beyond the United States that could also be helpful if we imported them into the country right now from a practice standpoint?
Absolutely. So in addition to those five recommendations we gave to Senate, we also believe that companies and policymakers should look to other countries and adopt the most privacy-forward best practices possible. So right now, governments across the board are leveraging big data in a multitude of ways, and this really is a global effort. We're in this together, and we cannot, as a global economy and in a humanitarian sense, leave one another behind. We should all be cognizant of civil liberty violations. So we've been talking a lot about mobile location data, and there's just movement on this across the globe. Pardon the pun. For example, Israel's government passed emergency regulations allowing agencies to use mobile location data. The European Commission is requesting anonymized and aggregate location data. South Korea is creating this publicly available map of location data from those who have tested positive. And the U.S. itself announced an effort to collect location data across 500 cities. This is all tied in with other specific apps like Singapore's Trace Together, which could serve as an early warning system. So while we look at these emerging technologies and all the benefits they provide, we also need to look at how governments and public health stakeholders are adopting protective measures, and then we should seek to promote those measures in our own country.
Anything we should avoid?
This is a really hard question. I think we need to continue honoring enduring privacy measures, but we also need to be forgiving and patient right now. There's this massive push to start blaming companies, countries, healthcare providers, really anyone and everyone. And while we should be thoughtful, proactive, and cognizant of harms here, we also need to be working together to better technologies that can aid in the fight against coronavirus and help support us as we transition into an era of social distancing, instead of simply tearing new technologies down. We're in this together, and I look forward to the ways we can support the benefits of emerging technologies while minimizing the risks here.
Sort of last question. There's been a lot of discussion in the hardcore, both the academic publications and in the hardcore tech publications around various efforts led by institutions like, you know, MIT and then Stanford to develop a whole new set of tools that would allow us to do some of the things we've been talking about. So where you could use, for example, Bluetooth, which would be anonymized, to tell you whether you'd come in contact with somebody with COVID. So there are really smart people working on really interesting things right now. That's going to go beyond the time we're in today. So how long do you think this period of innovation could and should last when we're talking about how to use technology, how to use data to make sure the next time one of these events, whether it's a pandemic or a natural disaster, doesn't matter, the next time we have a major crisis like this, we're better prepared? Do you have a sense of what we need to be doing and not treat this as a one-time event?
This is absolutely not a one-time event. And this frenetic period of innovation should last until we have something solid that we can rely on for the next time something like this happens. The coronavirus is interesting. It's unique and it's terrible. But we have also had periods in U.S. history in particular where privacy has been frustrated due to these sorts of terrible crisis situations. So we look at The Ebola crisis, we look at lessons learned all the way back to the Patriot Act and before, and we need to make sure that we're not thinking of this as a conversation that started right at the inception of the coronavirus. Instead, this is one that's been long-lasting and one that should continue to be long-lasting. When we're talking about future issues, we should be thinking about things like the office of the future, what the coronavirus is doing to our society very long-term, and also things like immunity passports, which are identification cards right now, completely hypothetical, but maybe a future device to say whether someone has already had the virus and may be able to travel. But right now, we just don't know enough in terms of those passports about our immunity responses, accuracy of antibody testing. And so again, we need to exercise that patience when we start looking at these future thinking initiatives.
Well, thank you, Caitlin, for joining us today. It's going to have a long tail, and I have a sneaking suspicion we'll be having more conversations about this in our future.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Programs Better Series. Don't miss an episode by subscribing at our website, bbbprograms.org. Click on the podcast tab and hit the subscribe button. You'll find all of our episodes there, where you can listen on your Apple Podcast app, iHeartRadio, or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.